Says Shulchan Aruch that we're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av, in part because Pikudei Hashem Yishar Mesam Chalev. Torah is something that adds joy to our lives, and that's the type of joy that we're going to try to avoid over the course of Tisha B'Av. An exception are Tisha B'Av topics. Tisha B'Av topics like the Gemaras we're about to take a look at, the Gemaras in the fifth parak of Gittin, that begin on Daf Nun Hey Beis, that give the background. The story, the background of the Churban Bayis Sheni, and not only the background in terms of what were the episodes that led to it, as we're going to see, is give us some sense also of the, we were talking before about the tshuva as being such a central theme of Tisha B'Av, as the Rambam points out when he opens the halachas of Tisha B'Av. The goal is not only to commemorate the past, but to inspire ourselves to change our future. To change our decisions and to thereby change the way events will unfold in the future. So this is not only is this something that happens to be mutter, but this is really central to driving forward the avodah of Tisha B'Av, to appreciate what these Gemaras are telling us. So feel free to follow along inside or outside. We didn't have a decision was not to have handouts this year, but feel free to follow along on your phone, or just listen outside. The Gemaras begin the bottom of Nun Hayim and Beis. Mishnah makes reference, in a halachic context, to Haruge Milchama, to the fact that there had been great violence done to the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yehuda, and elsewhere. And so if after a few lines of discussion about the halachic content of the Mishnah of Sikrikon, Gemara picks up the two dots in the bottom of Nun Hayim and Beis, diving into the background of Haruge Milchama. So here we go. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan frames the entire story with a pasuk in Mishlei. Ma'ay dechsev, what's the significance of a pasuk? Ashrei adam mefached tamid makshel libo yipol bara'a. Fellow who is mefached tamid, he's in a good place. Always afraid. It's a good place to be. Maksha libo, if one hardens his heart, yipol bara, if I'm insensitive, I'm going to fall into bad stuff. Now, before you even see where the Gemara goes with that, it's important to frame this. Tosas points out, the Gemara end of Brachos notes that this Gemara is in counterpoint to Pachadu B'Tzion Chatan. We do not, the Gemara in Brachos points out, we're not great fans of being constantly worried. We're not great fans of living lives of fear. But the Gemara says it has its place. And as Rashi points out here, Mefachif, very, very brief and fascinating Rashi, says the type of positive pachad that this pasuk in Mishlei is talking about, that the Gemara is about to see as sort of underlying so much of the stories and the backstory of Churban Bayis, is as Rashi says, Do egler os ha nolad. I'm aware, and I'm concerned of how things will play out. That you don't just sort of mosey through life and do whatever, but you're aware of the fact that my actions have ramifications. I'm roas hanolad, and I think before I act. I'm aware that I can't just do whatever I want, and I may pay a price for bad decisions. And so Rashi is sort of setting the stage. Such a so bound up with what we saw when we were reading Eicha, the what undergirds the whole story of Churban Bayis is people making bad decisions and not thinking, just moseying through life without thinking. Well, what's this? Where is this going to lead? And just doing stuff and suffering the consequences afterwards. Mesillas Yesharim identifies that as the very first step in a methodical, serious program of self-growth, is to actually actively think about life, not just to go through life with one's mind in neutral, but to go through life, to progress through life with one's mind in drive, to actually make thoughtful, contemplative, self-reflective decisions. Rashi says, that's how Rabbi Yochanan is opening this story. Here are some examples of people who are not mefachei tamid, who weren't thinking before they acted. The Gemara identifies three pieces, three separate episodes of Churban. Yerushalayim was destroyed through the story of Kamsa, a fellow named Kamsa, another fellow named Bar Kamsa, a Tarnagol of a Tarnagolta, Harov Turmalka. A second story, which the Gemara will only get to on Daf Nun Zayin. I don't think we'll get there together tonight, though I encourage you to see more of this Gemara after we break. And the Gemara says that the very populous city, populous area called Turmalka, was destroyed because of an episode that began with a chicken and a rooster. And Asaka Derispak, because of the side of a chariot, of a wagon, Charov Beitar. The powerful city of Beitar was destroyed because of a story that once again began with something that seemed so small. And again, that's Rashi's point. Small little things can have significant consequences. So the Gemara now begins to talk about the Kamsa Bar Kamsa. What would that mean? A Kamsa Bar Kamsa, Haru Yishalayim, Yishalayim was destroyed because of who? The Gemara tells a story that's familiar, and yet, you know, the way Mesil Sharm writes in the opening paragraph, sometimes the things which are most familiar that require the most chazara. The things that we know best, when we actually look at them thoughtfully, there's a tremendous amount to be learned, and a tremendous amount of positive change can flow from that. So what's the story? There was a fellow who had a great friend, his name was Kamsa, and he was in a fight with someone else whose name was Bar Kamsa. And this fellow, we'll call him Reuven, we don't really know what this fellow's name is, which by the way is ironic, that it was the person that seems like the major driver of the whole story. We never hear what his name is. The I think it's the Marshah goes on to point out that we do hear about Kamsa, even though, as we're going to see in the story, Kamsa is a great guy, and he actually plays no role in the story whatsoever. Because the Gemara goes on to say, what happened is that Ahu Gavra, this anonymous fellow who was friends with Kamsa, was making a party, and Amar Leh Lashame, I see Li Kamsa. So apparently, he was a person of means, and he was sending his gabai around to to knock on doors and make personal invitations. And he told his gabai, knock on Kamsa's my friend, invite Kamsa to my party. And the gabai must have had wax in his ears, and he thought he heard Bar Kamsa, and he goes and knocks on the door of Bar Kamsa instead. And we'll see how the story unfolds. But what's intriguing, the first thing that strikes us is Kamsa has nothing to do with the story, other than he's the foil. He's the reason why this mistake was made. So I forget whether it's the Marshal Maral who makes a suggestion that the Kamsa played a role here also. Kamsa played a role here also. It's not for naught that the way the story plays out is that because he was friendly with Kamsa, he ends up in a terrible situation with Bar Kamsa, because because Kamsa too was party to this machlokas. It's something that psychologists write often nowadays in discussion about bullying, that it's the bystander who doesn't call the bully on what he's doing. The bystander who the bully feels is his friend and he has his, you know, has his back. The bystander did nothing. But the fact that I feel like I have a friend in this machlokas with that third party, that friend is a passive but important party to the machlokas as well. That's what he points out. The fact that Kamsa was a pal and Kamsa was okay with the machlokas that Ahu Gavra, his friend, was having with Bar Kamsa, Kamsa apparently bears responsibility as well. The difference between being a bystander and being an upstander. It's what another one of the Sfarim of Tanakh that we're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av Iyov. Medrash tells us, Sefer Iyov tells of the incredible suffering that this fellow named Iyov underwent. And most of the Sefer, he's grappling, trying to make sense of, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do this to me? The Medrash gives some background to the story. The Medrash speaks about, it's not, Gemara is not sure when Iyov lived. The one approach is that he was a contemporary of Moshe Rabbeinu. And with that in mind, Medrash sketches Paro sitting in council at the beginning of Parsha Shmos with three advisors: Bilam, Eov, and Yisrael. And the Havan is Chachma. Paro is trying to figure out how to deal with the Jewish problem. And he has this nefarious, violent plan to rid himself of all Jewish males. And the Medrash says, Bilam says, Yasher Koach, great idea. And Yisrael protests. How can you do this? It's immoral, it's unethical. How could you do that? What a heinous thing to do. And Eov says nothing. Eov Shasak. And the Medrash goes on to say that Bilam ultimately dies because of the role that he plays. Bilam Nerag. Yisro becomes a family of Jewish royalty. Yisro's daughter marries Moshe Rabbeinu. And Eov suffers. At the end of Sefer Eov, ultimately Eov's life is restored, but he goes through a period of intense suffering. What's remarkable about that Medrash is it doesn't seem to correspond. Bilam encouraged Paro to be violent, so he's punished. Yisro stood up for what's right, so he's rewarded. And Eov did nothing. So you would have expected Eov would get nothing. He wouldn't be punished and he wouldn't be rewarded. But instead, Eov suffers terribly. And the Musar Hasla is exactly this. That being a bystander to people making a machlokas and being a bystander to seeing people take advantage of others, that's not a neutral. That's a chet. A chet for which Eov was punished severely. And a chet for which, in Mefarshim understand, Kamsa is called out. We call it Kamsa bar Kamsa. Because he did nothing, but he did a tremendous, his passivity was a real contributor to the machlokas that ultimately led to Churban HaBayis. The Gemara says, so Bar Kamsa is accidentally invited. One of my kids asked me before, what was Bar Kamsa thinking? He shows up to the party. Like, what was he thinking? The Marsha actually addresses that. The Marsha thinks that maybe Kamsa and Bar Kamsa actually were related. It may not be. Not everyone in Cohen is related. But the Marsha thinks that maybe Bar Kamsa was Kamsa's son. And this Hahu Gavra, an anonymous fellow, was friendly with the father and hated the son. And so when Bar Kamsa gets a knock on the door and the Shama said, this fellow in town wants to invite you to Simcha, so he figured, okay, look, he's friendly with my father, so maybe out of respect to my father, he's inviting me, and maybe he wants to, whatever. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Bar Kamsa comes to the party, and this fellow making the party walks into the ballroom. Asa Ashra Adav Yosef, he sees that Bar Kamsa is sitting there. Amar Le Mechti, he says, look here. You are tzikrik. You're in a machlokas with me. I hate you. My bias hacha. What are you doing here? Kum, puk, get up and get out. Amalei hova, soy, shavkin. Look, I'm here already. Okay, you didn't want me here. It was a miscommunication. But I'm here, so let me sit. And you don't have to fund me. I'll pay you for whatever I eat and drink. Just let me sit here. Amalela, he says to him, absolutely not. Out. Amalela, Yehivnach Demei Palga de Sudasech. He says, I'll pay you half of what your party costs. And those who have made a simcha of the last year or two, just stop and think for a moment what that means. A single guest is offering to cover, I'll split the cost of the party with the Baal Simcha. Just let me stay. And then he doubles it. And the Hogavra says, no. He said, Yevnoch, the Mekul says, I'll pick up the entire tab. Just think for a moment, perhaps in the Vimei Talmud, they made more modest simchas than we do, but still, imagine. A single guest says, I'll pick up the entire tab. And it speaks to at least two things. Number one, it speaks to the sense of urgency that Bar Kamsa felt not to leave. Like, in our terminology, he's offering five figures to sit there for an hour. Let me stay for a half hour and I'll leave on my own. It'll be clean and smooth. Think for a moment about the sense of urgency, the sense of impending embarrassment, a devastating embarrassment that he knew he would feel if he had to, if he was pushed out. And one of my kids asked me earlier this evening, where we were talking through Kamsa Bakamsa, it's a remarkable thing. He said, why didn't the host take him up on it? I mean, it's a pretty good deal. Let him stay. So let him stay. Your entire cost is covered. That's very significant. And it's a reminder, again, of something that we all know, but we often forget, that sinim mikalkelas is ashura. That when we're angry, when we hate someone we don't think rationally, when we're angry, we lose the capacity for rational thought. As Shlomo Melech speaks about someone who's angry, someone whose temper is flaring, he's drunk. He's intoxicated in the sense that you lose it without any alcohol, but anger just causes us to lose our capacity for rational judgment. And we just, it made no sense. Let the fellows, how much will you suffer already? He'll cover the entire cost. Wasn't it worth it? But he wasn't even thinking. And how often does it happen to us? How often do we say things that we later regret, or worse, because in a moment of anger we weren't making rational decisions? Once again, that's where Rashi goes back to that opening Rashi. Ashi ad mefache tamid. The first fellow who just wasn't thinking, maybe the first fellow who wasn't thinking about where his action lead was Kamsa, who allowed machlokas to fester between the Hu Gavra and Bar Kamsa. And so the second person was this Hu Gavra. And then it goes from bad to worse. Avera Guerreras Avera. So he leaves, and apparently Bar Kamsa wasn't walking out quickly enough. Nakte biyade v'ukme v'apke. So the host takes Bar Kamsa by the hand and walks him out. And he is, as he anticipates, horrifically humiliated. And Amar, hold the Havu Yasra, Barnabala Machube. The rabbis were all there at this party, and they didn't say boo. Shmami na kanichaluhu. So apparently they're okay with it. And so I'm not just going to take revenge against the host. I'm going to take revenge against, you expect to take revenge against the rabbis. Now what he does doesn't really seem to have to do with Rabbanim in particular, but he can take revenge against Kol Yisrael. The Rabbanim to him represent Kol Yisrael. Why indeed did the Rabbanim not speak up? I don't know. Maybe they did the wrong thing. Or maybe Bar Kamsa is another example of someone who wasn't thinking rationally in the heat of the moment. And, you know, we've all been there. Right? I noticed that my tie is not matching. I noticed that the jacket and pants don't match, and it's a different shade of blue. And I'm convinced that everyone notices. But Maisa, other people notice. Right? But I'm feeling the humiliation from my perspective. Everyone sees. So Bar Kamsa probably thought, how many people saw? There was something going on the side. No one even knows what was going on. But in his mind, in his eye, everyone saw. And the consequence is absolutely disastrous. And we know what happens next. He cooks up this plan to get, how are you going to get Kol Yisrael in trouble? And with a focus on the Rabbanim. So he goes to Rome. And the Gemara sketches that he has an interview with the emperor. The case of Mardubach Yudai, the Jews are rebelling. And that had been an ongoing theme for some time. That had been cooking for a while. But Rome pushes back. Mi Eimar, why should I believe you? Let's see some evidence. He says, okay, let's try an experiment. So Bar Kamsa suggests an experiment. Shagaluhu b'kurbana. Let's send the carbon and chazis. And you'll see what happens. Let's see how they react to the imperial carbon. Chazis imakavinle. Let's see if they're willing to bring this carbon in on the Mizbeach. Now the din is that the Mizbeach is, the Beis HaMikdash is not for Jews only. The din is that a non-Jew can personally bring or send an animal to be brought as a carbon ola in the Beis HaMikdash. One need not be Jewish to makir a carbon all in the base of Mikdash. But Bar Kamtza was going to adulterate the evidence a little bit. So he's the one who's bringing the animal, Egla Tilsa, an exceptionally choice calf. On the way from Rome to Yerushalayim, he wounds the animal, either benibs fasaim or bedukin shebe'ain, either in its lip or in its eyelid. Duchta, now why those places? So the Gemara explains, and the Marsha has an additional layer of meaning here. The Gemara says, Duchta, deladidan hava mumu ledulav mumu. Is in a spot where it's a mum for us, but not for them. Which simply speaking means that in pagan practice, they would not, apparently, the Romans also had some concept of a mum, that it wouldn't be appropriate to offer a wounded animal as a carbon, but their standards were, lahavdil, were different than halachic standards. And they wouldn't offer something that's, a gross mum, a broken leg or something like that, but a nick in the lip, a nick on the eyelid, from the Roman perspective, it was irrelevant. From the halachic perspective, it was relevant, and it did disqualify that animal as a carbon. The Marsha suggests that the symbolism of this is that not clear whether he thinks Bar Kamtza meant this consciously, or that this was sort of a divine sign, and he was unconsciously playing this out, but that the chisaron was in the nivs v'asayim and the duk nishbayim. The chisaron was in how people spoke, and the chisaron was in how people looked at each other. And that's what was tragically playing itself out. And so we know, and then the next step. So far we've seen Kamtza, and we've seen Kamtza was a bystander. Hahu Gavra, the host, made horrific, horrific decisions, horrific hate, horrific temper, and then Bar Kamtza reacts with extraordinary vengeance, vengeance against Klal Yisrael. He wasn't just ruining the life of Hahu Gavra. He wasn't even going after the life of the particular Rabbanim who were at the party, whom he thought, correctly or incorrectly, had ignored his humiliation. He's magnifying this, amplifying this, and attacking Klal Yisrael as a nation. Once again, the cinema kakelis is Ashura. And it comes back to Rabbanim. I'm not sure if these are the Rabbanim who are at the party, but the Rabbanim of Sanhedrin. So the missing link here, presumably he brings it to a Kohen, who notices the mum, and appreciates immediately the situation. And this fellow walks in and says, this is an imperial carbon. Maybe it was, the animal may have been, for all we know, was wrapped in royal purple, but he made it clear, he communicated that this was, this animal was coming straight from the imperial palace in Rome. The Kohen looks at it to check it for mum and notices the subtle mum, and understood immediately what the situation was. And so presents it, the Gemara tells us, Tanam tell us that the Sanhedrin was situated right near the Mizbeach. Their office was not elsewhere in Yerushalayim. They were situated in an area that in a room right near the Mizbeach that had Kedusha, the area where the Sanhedrin sat had Kedusha Zazara. And so the Kohanim turned to them for guidance. I would pause for a moment just to appreciate that point. That's to appreciate the fact, something you often think about, that Tisha B'Av is, it's sometimes hard to know, we want to be Misabel of Yerushalayim, we want to be Misabel of Beis HaMikdash. So we ended tonight's kinos with a kina for the Holocaust. And that's something that we can relate to. Everyone knows someone who's a survivor, who lost. We've seen pictures, we've seen videos, we've heard about it. We have some sense of what that loss was. A loss of Beis HaMikdash, very hard to relate to. So hard to relate to. To cry for Beis HaMikdash. We never saw Beis HaMikdash. And to say that we miss Karbanos, so again, conceptually speaking, abstractly, yes, obviously, large swaths of Chumash are dedicated to the mitzvahs of Karbanos. They're obviously very important. It's something that we're missing, but again, it's so abstract. Mitzvahs that we've never had. Mitzvahs our great-great-great-grandparents. Mitzvahs that for close to 2,000 years no Jew has practiced. I think I've shared with some of you that I am personally missing very much sitting in I feel so out of place to be in Chutz La'aretz and Tisha B'Av, and I hear ringing year after year after year, hearing from Rav Shechter and hearing from Rav Trusky that addressing this question. And to recognize that the Beis HaMikdash wasn't just a place of Karbanos. It was also a place of Karbanos. The Beis HaMikdash was the center of all the parts of Arvos Hashem that we are familiar with. Basi Beis Tfili Karel Chol HaAmim, it was a place of Kabbalah Satfila. It was a place of Chesed. It was the headquarters of Torah Shebichsav. The Luchos were there. The official Sifrei Azara were there. And it was the headquarters of Torah Shebaal Peh. Where the Rambam describes again Hilchos Mamrim that the Sanhedrin are not only a judicial body, but they are the central pillar of the Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. And the halacha demands that they be right next to the Mizbeach, that they be in the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash is not just the center of Karbanos. Beis HaMikdash is the center of Kirbos Elokim. With all that that entails, all of our Avos Hashem is so like. Imagine what it would be like. So now it's very hard to imagine what would be like if you could bring Karbanos. That takes a strong sense of imagination. Sefer HaKuzri speaks in Mamar Shlishi about the ways in which we can use our imagination to further Avos Hashem. And he talks about imagining great scenes in Jewish history, imagining Akeda, imagining Mamar Asina. Certainly, if we can imagine Karbanos, Matov. But it's a lot easier to appreciate. Imagine what it would be like. Imagine what our learning would be like. Imagine what our davening would be like if we could daven based on Mish. Imagine what our learning would be like if we had a Sanhedrin. If the Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh and the Limud of Torah Shebaal Peh was centered around the great Tzaddiki Hadar, the great Chachmei Hadar, who were learning every day next to the Mizbeach. Whose learning was enhanced by the Hashra'as HaShchina and Siyat HaShmaya being near Mizbeach. Imagine what our learning would be like. Imagine what Shi'urim would be like. Imagine if you could listen to the Chachmei HaSanhedrin recorded. Imagine podcasts by the Chachmei HaSanhedrin. That's something you can actually like reach out and touch. Imagine if we could hear Shi'urim from people who were learning Torah every day near the Mizbeach. And that's what happened here. Because the Kohen had a Shaila. What do you do? This was a Shaila in Kachim. It was also a Shaila in the fifth Chelek of Shulchan Aruch. Because this carbon with the mum wasn't really a Kachim Shaila. I mean, it was clearly a Kohen. The Kohen knew his new Psula and Mekdashim. He understood this. It wasn't a Shaila. It wasn't a Maris Shaila. Let the Rav decide, is this enough of a cut to be a Psula or not? No. But the question was, what do we do? But this is from Rome. Savar Abanu le Karube. So the overall approach of the members of Sanhedrin was we should be makriv it. Why? It's a connected adin. It's a violation of Mashchasam behem mumbam. Carbon has a mum. Yes, but Mishum Shalom Malchus. Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh. We're not going to be makriv. We're going to start a war with Rome. Lives are at stake. Armaluhu Rabbi Zachar ben Avkulas, was apparently a senior member of the Sanhedrin. He says, Yom Rubali Mumin Kraven Lagam Mizbeach. We can't do that. People might think that that's actually the din. They might not appreciate the Pikuach Nefesh, and they might think that such an animal is kosher to be brought as a carbon. So then they said, well, if that's not an option, Savar L'Mikdalei. We need to eliminate this Bar Kamsa fellow. He's a rodent. It was clear, and he may have been explicit about it, that his plan was to go back to Rome and start a war between Rome and Yerushalayim. So he's a rodef, a clear, open rodef. The Laleza Valema. Amalub Zachariah. Zachariah says, no, you can't do that either. Yomru Matil Mum Bekotchim Yeharig. People might misinterpret and think that he was that inflicting a mum, imposing a mum on a korban, is a capital crime. And what happens is that indeed he's allowed to walk to head back to Rome and tell them that they refuse to bring your korban. He leaves out the critical detail that the reason why they didn't bring the korban is because of what I did, what Bar Kamsa did, and it makes it seem as though they rejected it because it was Rome. They rejected it because it was imperial. And the Rabbi Yochanan, who began this story at this point, comments on the Sanuso Shor Rizchar ben Avkulas, Hecheriva es beisenu v'sarfa hechaleinu v'eglisanu me'artzenu. His anvisanus, it sounds like his humility, it caused the destruction of our Beis HaMikdash. It caused the burning of our Hechel. It caused Klal Yisrael to be ejected from Eretz Yisrael. It was this decision. A wide range of approaches amongst Mepharshim how to read this. So some see this as positive, and many see it as negative. And the Yamshel Shlomo comments in, I believe, the fifth parak of Bava Kamma, that there was something Rabbi Rav Yitzchak Ben Avkulas did, that to falsify Torah is something that does that's not allowed, to present incorrect din, something that's not allowed even b'makom pikuach nefesh, which is a radical approach. He has other rayas as well. Again, that radical approach that has to be developed more at a time when it even is permitted. So he sees it reflected here as well. I mean, Yomru. So why Yomru? That pikuach nefesh should be docha that too. And so Rechai is cool saying, yeah, but to teach incorrect halacha that we're not allowed to mizayev Torah, to falsify the Torah. The question is, okay, but they weren't falsifying. That wasn't the goal. That wasn't what they were doing. That may have been an indirect result. And they could have explained. And the question, what's anvesanu social b'zachariah? So Rashi says it means his savlanut. He was so willing to take it. He wasn't reacting. The lack of reaction. And some understand that it actually means anava. It means humility. Where is his humility? He doesn't seem very humble. He seems like he's very willing to state his opinion. Chaim Ben Kulas seems quite assertive. So some suggest that the Gemara tells us that the Sanhedrin, the way Sanhedrin worked, is that maschil natsad. Now, when they had a discussion about an issue, they would start from the side. The least senior Rabbanim in the Sanhedrin would speak up first. That way, because if you had the most senior Rabbanim speak up first, then the rest would feel very uncomfortable disagreeing. In order for everyone to feel comfortable presenting their opinion, the least senior Rabbanim would speak first, and then they would work their way up the ladder. So everyone felt comfortable presenting their honest opinion, then the discussion could ensue. So some suggest, if Chaim Ben Avkulas, his misplaced another, he was talking one of the seniors, Chachmei Sanhedrin, but he thought, I'm low on the totem pole. So he insisted on speaking first. I have a misplaced sense of modesty, but as a result, it became, he stifled the conversation. Be that as it may, the hour is late, maybe we'll go for another 10 minutes. I don't want anyone to feel, there's plenty more in this Gemara, 2.5 block. I don't want anyone to feel socially obligated to stay. Maybe let's see for another 10 minutes and we'll wrap up by 11 o'clock.
That sounds almost from the structure of the Gemara that the criticism is on Rav Zachariah more than it is on the host of the Susa.
Yeah, it's interesting. Rav Yochanan hasn't editorialized by anyone else.
That's just to put it the way it was, but it's Rav Zachariah that's the problem.
It's interesting. It is interesting. And it's ironic, Bar Kamsa's goal here was to snap back at the Rabbanim, and indeed, well, the Rabbanim does play a major role. Yeah, and maybe also because, Sviva of Nisar HaMiyod, those who are closer to Ribbono Shalom and those who are wiser, so we expect more of them. And as they may have been more justification in Rizhar ben Avkulas' mind for what he was doing, but at the same time, he's more responsible for his call. You're a leader. You bear even more responsibility to think about how are things going to play out. And again, it goes back to that the first comment of Rebbechim. It's all Asher and Mufachei Tamid. It's such like a string. I can't say a comedy of errors, but a tragedy of errors. One person after another is not fully thinking about where my decision is going to lead. You're just looking at the here and now. You're not thinking, not playing out in your mind. And if you understand that Rabbi Yochanan is critiquing Rizhar ben Avkulas, as many Mepharshim do, so then that critique fits in. The Kamsa and the Ho Gavra and Bar Kamsa and Rizhar ben Avkulas, all of them make decisions that play out in ways that they perhaps did not fully appreciate because they didn't fully think it through.
It's ironic for Rizhar ben Avkulas, though. Part of his decision-making process is he is ruler at the Nolad.
Right.
It just, he didn't see, or he didn't, his priorities weigh towards the Nolad of, well, what are they going to learn from this, that a Bamum could be brought, or are they going to learn
right.
from this?
And in light of that, the irony, right, he was focused on, they may misunderstand the din, the irony is, it probably never happened because the Beis HaMikdash, as a result of his decision, there wasn't a Beis HaMikdash around for anyone to... The Shaila wasn't going to come up of Matzal Bum B'Kachim. No one's Matzal Bum B'Kachim, there were no Kachim left. Once you have no Beis HaMikdash, this all became moot. This all became moot. And then the Gemara tells that they send Niron, who may or may not be Nero, and he approaches Yerushalayim and gets scared off. And then they send Vespasian. And here we come to the, out of the sense of time, this perhaps will be the last leg of the story that we'll see for now. The Gemara says, Vespasian comes, also Tzara Lehat Lashni, he sets siege to Yerushalayim for 3 years. And the Gemara is skipping down a couple lines. The Gemara says, Havu Hano Telasa Asiri. The tough in Aramaic is a shin in Hebrew. Three Ashirim. Three unusually wealthy people. Nakdim ben Gurion ben Kalbo Savua ben Tzitzis HaKeses. These three fellows, and the Gemara takes time to explain their names, which is significant. Nakdim ben Gurion, Shenokdalo Chama Ba'avuro. The son. The his tefillah, Gemara and Tanis, Rashi sends the Gemara and Tanis, his tefillah succeeded in causing a miracle that the son stood. Gemara speaks about, Gemara tells the story of Masachas Tanis, that he had negotiated, there was a time of great drought, and he negotiated with, sounds like a local Roman governor, to sell him enormous amounts of water to give water to the Jewish community, and they told him, If your cisterns aren't refilled by X date, I'll pay you. And he's davening for rain. He's davening for rain. And it begins to rain, and the sun is setting. He davened that the sun should be frozen in places the cisterns could fill up. So his name Nakadimon Ben Gurion is a reference to that episode. Ben Kalva Savua. Kalva is a dog, and Savua sounds like satiated. Shkal nechaz lebeitza kishu roiv kekelev, yotzei kishu hu saveya. Fellow can come in, he could have come into his house as famished as a dog. Apparently dogs get very hungry. And but you, no matter how famished you were, you would walk out very full. And but tzitzis hakeses, shayso tzitzaso nigreres al gabi kisasos. His tzitzis were dragged along... The silk rugs, or shaya kesto mutalis ben gedoli Roman. Perhaps his seat, his pillow, when he would go to Rome, he had entree to the most exclusive circles of the Roman aristocracy. The Maharal spends time on the fact that the Gemara apparently wants to tell us. It's significant in this context to know about their names, to understand the what lie what lies behind each one's name. Maral sees into that at least in part. He has Alpi Sod as well. But when he says Alpi Nigla, he talks about the fact that each of these stories relates to an episode that highlights their particular koach in Avodas Hashem. The first thing that strikes you is just that these are all people who are apparently very wealthy and extraordinary tzaddikim. Like the Ben Gurion. Koach HaTfila. Ben Kalba Savua, that's an extraordinary madrega of Chesed HaChanas HaZarachim. And Ben Tzitzis HaKesis, it sounds like, and certainly the first approach to the Gemara, it sounds like it speaks to the extraordinary respect he had for the mitzvah of tzitzis. And the Gemara goes on to say that between the three of them, they were ready to support Yerushalayim for decades, it sounds like. One said, I'll give the chiti v'sari, I can provide wheat and barley. One says, I can provide chamra, milcha, and mishcha, wine, oil, and salt. And the third one says, b'detzivi, I can provide wood, firewood. The shabchu rabbanon l'detzivi. And the Gemara says that there was a particular, rabbanon were particularly taken with the one who was ready to provide firewood for Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara goes on to say that they were ready to, they could have kept Yerushalayim going for 21 years under siege. Vespasian would have lost interest way before they would have run out of provisions. 21 years. No army is going to maintain a siege on a city for 21 years. But there were people who were looking for war. There were baryone. There were violent extremists who were looking for a fight. And the Rabbanim said to the Nepuk Nevich Lama, Badayu, let's work out some sort of arrangement with the Romans, let's negotiate with them and get them to leave us alone. And these Baryonim were looking for war. And Lam Kamu Kalanu Lahano Ambri, Dechiti Vasari, Lahava Kafru. And these Baryonim wanted to force conflict with the Romans, and they burnt down the stores of provisions. They burnt down the stores of 21 years worth of wheat and barley in order to force the Jews to go to war against the Romans. You think about perhaps this is the ultimate in terms of not thinking about the consequences of your actions. Yet we see it all the time. They thought they were doing a chesed for the Jews by starving them. Right? They thought that I'm going to help the Jews. They thought that the way they're going to demonstrate that Jewish lives matter to them is by forcing the Jews, I'm going to destroy their food, I'm going to create a famine, and I'm going to force the Jews into conflict with the Romans. Talk about Enoros Anolot. Talk about losing any sense of perspective. It's getting so wrapped up in my own way of thinking, I didn't see the bigger picture. I want to finish close with something positive. Because one of the things that struck me in this Gemara is, the Gemara, what's so exciting about firewood? They're all important. Okay, you want to make bread, you need grain and you need firewood. Why is that so particularly exciting? That doesn't seem so exciting to me. And the Gemara says, Amar of Chista, Achleba dechiti by shitin achlebe detzivi. Chista commented that one bushel, perhaps one measure of wheat, requires many measures, 60 measures of firewood. In other words, in order to make bread, the quantity of firewood it takes to make a loaf of bread is a lot more than the quantity of wheat that's required to make a loaf of bread. And therefore, so the Maharal comments in Chiddush Agadas, all the Maharals have been quoting this evening from the Maharal's Chiddush Agadas in Gittin. So Maharal comments, he says, bracha is related to ribui. Bracha is related to expansion, quantity. So if you need more wood, well, that's a sign of a greater bracha. What does that mean? He adds a drop more. It doesn't relate directly to Rambam, but I believe there's a Rambam that he has in mind. He says, because we're talking about the chesed each one was doing. We're talking about the wealth that each one was prepared to share with their Jewish brethren, their Jewish brothers and sisters, the rest of the Jewish community in Yerushalayim. And the larger quantity of wood may not have been more expensive than the smaller, denser quantity of wheat and barley. But there was more giving involved. And I'll leave you with this. I think he doesn't directly refer to Rambam, but I believe that may be what he has in mind. Rambam comments in Perkei Avos, in the parish in Perkei Avos, one of the more mysterious Mishnayos, V'hakol lefi rov ha-ma'ase. Everything goes according to rov ha-ma'ase. How you translate that phrase is a matter of vigorous machlokas amongst Mefarshim. The Rambam understands the parish in Mishnayos that it means as follows. It means, which is better, to give right $1,000 check or to distribute $1,000 over time to many different people in many different episodes, to give $10 here and $20 here and $30 there and $5 there, and over time adds up to $1,000 versus one check, writing one check for $1,000. Giving $1,000 at a time, that's a pretty impressive gift. But the Rambam says, and either way you might argue, look, $1,000, that's a very impressive act, or you might say, it's all the same. I've contributed $1,000 to Aniyei Yisrael. Now, what does it matter one way or the other? Six and one half dozen of the other. The Rambam says, no. The giving in small amounts over time is far, hakolafi rov hamase, is the number of actions. Because the Rambam says, it's true in terms of impact on others, either way, I've contributed $1,000 of wealth to Aniyei Yisrael. I've reduced the impoverishment of Aniyei Yisrael by $1,000. But how about the impact on me? How about the impact on me? Every time I give, it shapes me. Every time I give, it polishes me. It chips away at some of the stinginess within. It polishes, it highlights some of the generosity within. Every good masa shapes me. So the Rambam says, if I give $1,000 at once, that was one impressive act. It comes and goes. But if I'm giving consistently, repeatedly, in small amounts, but I'm practicing generosity, I'm being generous. I was generous yesterday, I'm generous today, I'm generous tomorrow. Hakolothi rov ha-masa. The impact of mitzvahs on me have a lot to do with the quantity of mitzvahs. And so to give many times will have a far more profound impact on me than one impressive act, and then it's never repeated. So that's what he appears to be saying, that the chesed of giving a lot of wood, giving wood and more wood and more wood and more wood, and you know, unload another package from the truck, another package from the truck, so that shaped us. And these are the people, we were looking at all these people who were you know, examples of what not to be. All these people who were not mefached tamid, who weren't Roas Hanolot. The Rambam talks about in the fifth parak of Shmona Prakin, it talks about studying the value of studying history and literature and talking about people. So sometimes there's value in seeing a negative role model and seeing what not to be, who not to be like. But of course, there's also, as he points out there, incredible power in positive role models. And so in these Gemaras, you have the negative role models of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa and Ahu Gavra. And certainly those Bar Yone. And again, Machlokas, how to understand Rav Tzvi ben Avkulas. But at the same time, these three Ashirim stand out as people who are willing to give. And particularly, the one who is perhaps it's Ben Tzitzis HaKesas, the third one who's ready to give the Tzivi, and to think about how to plug in. Each one had his own tumas nefesh, and one had a particular affinity for tefillah, one a particular affinity for chesed, one a particular affinity for tzitzis. And the capacity to give, and to give, and to give again, and to be shaped by it, these are ways that we can perhaps shape ourselves as well, and to plug into the tshuva opportunity of Tisha B'Av, and to seek to increase the kirvas l'kim in our lives. We should be zocha, that should be an impactful Tisha B'Av. I should call Hever. No.